Hi, and welcome to Ryan Talks Tax, a podcast to keep you up to date on the latest developments in Canadian tax and government funding. I'm Jim Day. In today's episode, we're going to turn our attention to Canadian corporate income tax, and more specifically, the Scientific Research and Experimental Development Tax Credit Program. Now, that's a long name, so sometimes you'll hear it referred to as the SR&ED Tax Credit Program, or as I sometimes like to call it, SHRED. So if you hear me say SHRED during the podcast, I'm not talking about shredding paper or shredding on a guitar or a surfboard. I'm talking about scientific research and experimental development. To help us understand how the program works, we're joined by several members of Ryan's SR&ED practice, including Laura Ranieri, a technical manager, Jeffrey Stewart, a senior manager, Mohammed Parpia, a director, and David Douglas, principal and leader of the practice. Welcome to you all. David, since you're the leader, we'll start with you. What can you tell us about the Scientific Research and Experimental Development Tax Credit Program?
The Scientific Research and Experimental Development Program was started in 1983 by the government in order to attract research institutions to Canada from the U.S. in particular. It's grown into the largest innovation support program in Canada. Nearly $4 billion is given out each year to support research and development activities in Canada. What the program was designed to do is really to help offset the risk of developing new products, processes, materials, and companies that are going through that corporate development R&D. It was really designed to help support that activity.
So how do you know if you're eligible for the program?
What one must do to qualify for that program is to be faced with what we call a technological uncertainty. This has to be a problem or an obstacle to achieving your technical objectives in developing new or improved processes or materials. It has to be a technological problem. It has to be related to your capabilities, techniques, approaches, or knowledge of your and understanding of your technology. So it's not what you're doing with the technology that matters, but what you're doing to the technology. So that differentiates it from technological adoption versus technological uncertainty.
Interesting. And what are those criteria?
The three criteria that have to be met are technological uncertainty, as I mentioned. Once that blockage, something you don't know, something you don't understand, once you identify what that is, that forces you into an experimental mode. The fancy word for it is systematic investigation, but really it's that iterative approach to trying to solve that technological problem. And through that, if that's done in a systematic way, then one learns about your technology in doing that, leading to what's called a technological advancement. So the three criteria are technological uncertainty, systematic investigation, and technological advancement. And if you can demonstrate that those three criteria are being met in the efforts that you're undertaking, then you belong in the Scientific Research and Experimental Development Program.
Now, this is actually an income tax credit, right?
This is a tax credit program that goes in with your tax return. The description of all three of those criteria are written out and included with your tax return along with the quantification of the effort that goes into it, including your labor, overhead, materials costs, and contractor costs that go in with the efforts on that project.
Thanks, David. Now let's talk a little more about eligibility. Jeff, how do you know if a project has enough technological uncertainty? What should a taxpayer be looking for?
A project is often defined by the business project itself. And within the business project is often a development project. And it's within the development project that you may encounter obstacles or barriers or uncertainties that prevent you from achieving your objective, and that is to develop a new product or process. Once you've established that you have that uncertainty and you're unable to overcome that uncertainty using your existing knowledge base or using what's publicly available in the general literature to solve your problem, you have established that there is a technological uncertainty and you've established a starting point for SHRED. And now you're saying, here's why I'm undertaking that project. Because I have this uncertainty and I can't get to my objective or achieve my advancement. So once you've established that there is a SHRED project here, why you're undertaking the project, we need to understand the how aspect of it. And what that means is that the experiments or the trials or the tests that you undertake to overcome your uncertainty need to be methodical in nature, need to follow a particular pattern, need to have a reason for doing it. And this represents the how, as in how was the work undertaken to overcome that uncertainty. Once you've established that you have taken the necessary steps and undertaken the methodical nature in addressing your uncertainty, you have established that you've achieved the how aspect of a SHRED project. So as we've spoken about, you've established that there's a why because you have an uncertainty that's preventing you from achieving your advancement. And in order to achieve that advancement, you need to undertake your experiments, your methodical trials, your scientific method needs to be followed to address that advancement. Once you've established both, then you have a SHRED project that is ready to be claimed.
Thanks, Jeff. It sounds like there's lots of projects out there that might qualify for the SHRED tax credit. You know, earlier I had a chance to speak with one of your colleagues, Fadi Wiebe, who's also a director in the group. And I asked him, you know, can you give me some concrete examples? You know, what about software or video games? Can something like that qualify for the credit? And here's what he had to say.
Today, I'm going to provide four examples of topics that at first glance, they do not seem to be eligible for SHRED. However, digging further, they might be. So these topics are ERP or CRM. Second topic is video games development. Third topic is legacy app development. And fourth topic is machine learning algorithm development. In the first example, let's take, Microsoft Dynamics. So the software provides you tools to cover most of your needs. However, there are always some edge cases and maybe some integration issues with the client's software, because the client's backend may not be designed to work with Microsoft Dynamics. So all these are examples where we can claim these activities where the solution is not available in the market. Second topic is the video game development. Many games are developed using routine methodologies. However, in some cases, there is always a problem with the sound or with the image flickering, some incompatibilities with some soundboards, and whenever the solution is not easily available, developers will need to do some R&D and make few experimentations in order to overcome the challenge. Next topic is legacy app development. Many companies out there are still using antiquated languages such as COBOL, Visual Basic 3 or 4 or even 6, or 32-bit apps. They may work on AS400 or mainframe where it's not easy to have the legacy applications talk to much more modern applications. So all these challenges, whenever they are not enough documented in the marketplace and say on Google or in the public domain, work on overcoming these challenges is eligible. Next topic is machine learning algorithms. Developers face the constraint of how to make the algorithm go faster, what to do when there is a scarce amount of data, not representative of the whole population, or how can they improve the recall and precision metrics. All these challenges need some experimentation and some dials to tune in order to achieve the objective.
I found Fadi's comments interesting, but what about something more basic? Laura, I understand you're an expert on food manufacturing. Are there any opportunities there? What about this ongoing trend towards more organic and natural foods?
These changes in implementing natural organic ingredients are often driven by the consumer, who are interested in three key things: genetically modified organisms, which is modifying plant or animal's genetics at an individual gene level, as opposed to traditional agriculture, which changes with multiple generations through natural selection. And then there is how it's grown, which is organically or not. Organic just means it does not use a list of banned substances, however they may use approved substances to prevent disease and insect issues within the growth cycle. Next is how is it processed. There is natural ingredients. This is regardless of how they're grown. It cannot have any added nutrients such as vitamins, minerals, or anything taken away from it such as caffeine. Now, natural organic don't have any implications on the nutrition or health of a food. However, from a food science perspective or food manufacturing perspective, they may impact your legacy or new products. The biggest impact it often has, they relate to shelf life. Shelf life, you have a minimum time to get to consumer. How do you do that with natural ingredients where you might have legacy ingredients that work really well? However, the natural ingredients may impart a flavor, such as tocopherols impart rosemary, citric acid and lemony, or salt or sugar, which also impart nutritionals that you may not want to impact. Further, once you start adding in the organic, they may have slightly different makeups with regards to fat, protein, and carb content that may then further impact not only your organoleptic properties, but also how they run through the machinery and how they're processed. Taken all together, this is what could lead to your uncertainty and why you have to undertake a project that may then come up to be shred within food science or food manufacturing environment.
Those are great examples. Thanks, Laura. You know, I'm starting to see why having a degree in either science or engineering is really helpful to work in this field. You know, when I think about scientific research, the picture that comes to mind is somebody in a lab coat, maybe they've got protective glasses on, and they're mixing up some chemicals and carefully observing the reaction, or maybe they're staring into a microscope somewhere. But clearly, this tax credit is available for much more than just purely science experiments. I guess once you've identified an eligible project, David, you know, what happens next? Like, how will applying for the SHRED tax credit affect the corporation's taxes?
So to begin with, there are fundamentally two different programs at play in the SHRED program. There's a basic 15% investment tax credit that all corporations get, no matter whether they're Canadian-controlled, foreign companies, large companies, small companies. That credit is available to everybody, as well as provincial credits. There's provincial credits that are also available to all sizes of corporations. What is different is that some companies are eligible for an enhanced federal rate of 35%, as well as some enhanced provincial credits, depending on where you are, that can be are both an enhanced rate, plus they are refundable. So even if a company, such as a startup, is not paying corporate tax, that credit is refundable regardless of what the taxable status of that company is. So it's very important to first delineate, you know, which camp you fall into. It can't be a public corporation, can't be owned more than 50% by a foreign company if your capitalization is less than $50 million. So if you look at your balance sheet and your retained earnings, share capital, and long-term debt is less than $50 million, then you may be eligible for that enhanced rate. So it's really designed for small and medium-sized enterprises to be able to generate that refundable tax credit.
That's good to know. And how might that impact a company down the road? Will the credit that they received be taxed in future years?
Now, if you are a larger company and you're in losses, while you can't immediately use that credit can be carried forward for 20 years. So it's still a tax asset. It's still eligible to be applied against your taxes at a time that you're paying corporate tax. Tax credits are included in business income, so they are taxed. So if you are a taxable corporation, you will be taxed on that income like any other income.
Well, that makes sense. Still worth it to get the tax savings in the first place, though. Obviously, there are also other ways to fund research and development in Canada, you know, in addition to this tax credit. Mohammed, how would you recommend that a taxpayer maximize the amount of government support they receive for a particular project?
There are lots of different forms of government support out there. 500-600 different types of grants across various levels of government. So how do you make the most of it? You need to plan. You need to look forward. You can't just approach things haphazard and expect the maximum level of government support. You need to lay out the funding roadmap. What sort of grants are available? Where is your project going? You know, do you need hiring and training? Is there R&D? Is there commercialization? The different grants available for any and all of these different areas. And once you have planned that, then you need to prioritize different funding sources based on your project. What programs will work together? What expenses will work together? And if you have any questions, reach out to one of the Ryan MentorWorks specialists or visit us at ryan.com.
Good advice. Now, I know Ryan has a great track record in getting SHRED claims approved. But it's not always smooth sailing, is it? I know over the years I've seen court cases for specific taxpayers go either way. You know, sometimes it can take a lot of effort to show the CRA that a project is eligible. In fact, I think there was a recent court decision on that very point. Would one of you like to comment on that? Jeff, maybe?
Recently, the Tax Court of Canada released a decision titled Arizona 1 Limited versus the Queen. And within that was an appeal by Arizona 1 for the disallowment of their SR&ED claims for 2014 and 2015. The reason that the Canada Revenue Agency disallowed the claims was that they felt that the work that was undertaken by Arizona 1 was routine in nature, that they were looking to optimize a particular system, and that there was nothing unusual about the work they were doing. Justice Hogan, who presided over the case, disagreed with the findings of the Canada Revenue Agency, and he gave a number of reasons why that these projects should have been allowed to be shred. Arizona 1 claimed 6 projects over 2 years. The first 3 projects in 1 year, 3 projects in the other year. These projects all related to developing air quality monitoring methods, air quality testing methods, and equipment being used to test for air quality. The judge said the characterization of the projects by the CRA was oversimplified and did not recognize that the technological uncertainties that that Arizona 1 faced were hard to overcome. As far as the why and the how aspect of the claim, that there was a shortage of information or data and that there were too many technological uncertainties that Arizona 1 was not able to overcome their problem directly. And this helped establish that the why criteria of the projects met the shred criteria. In terms of the how aspect of it, Justice Hogan said that the work they carried out to overcome the why was methodical in nature and that they had to develop new methods and new methodologies to test these air quality readings and these contaminants in the air. So he felt that this also met the criteria for the how aspect of the projects themselves. In addition, Justice Hogan further opined that in the case of where there is a bit of a gray area on whether work being carried out is routine or not, if the work being carried out by the claimant, the SRDD claimant, is methodical in nature and is going towards achieving the how eligibility criteria, then that can often tip the scale in favor of the claimant because, generally speaking, his thought was that an individual would not be undertaking such methodical method or a scientific method to overcome a problem without looking for a technological advancement. And that is what Arizona 1 was trying to achieve. Another aspect that Justice Hogan opined on was that the work they carried out was not optimization, specifically speaking, and that within the Income Tax Act, in the way that SR&ED is defined, the work being done for the purpose of achieving an advancement or purpose of achieving an improvement thereto, and it can be incremental in nature, which suggests that work that's being done to improve a process doesn't have to be a wholesale improvement, that there can be incremental improvements to it, and that the work that Arizona 1 fall within that aspect of it in terms of the Income Tax Act, and it definitely was shred in nature. Finally, this is an important case from the standpoint that this is the first time that the how and the why eligibility criteria that has been established by CRA recently has been tested in the courts.
Thanks, Jeff. That sounds like really good news for taxpayers who might be doing R&D right now or considering doing some R&D projects in the future. Listen, thanks everyone for the great information about the SHRED program, or should I say the Scientific Research and Experimental Development Tax Credit Program, how it operates and, you know, why some help from the experts might be a good idea. I really appreciate your time today. That concludes this episode of Ryan Talks Tax. To find out more about the SHRED program and other funding support programs for R&D activities in Canada, please visit our website at mentorworks.ca. And please also let us know what you think about the podcast. You can send your questions, comments, or suggestions to events@ryan.com. Thanks for listening.